repair a few issues about the recent lecture. I looked up the spelling of Christopher Strachey. And this is the co-inventor of denotational semantic together with Dana Scott. What else? Ah, okay. I wanted to detail a bit on the substitution. Right. We have been discussing untyped lambda calculus. So that lambda calculus that I presented previously, it's called untyped lambda calculus. Because it's very simple, it doesn't contain any types. It's historically the first version had been developed by mathematicians very long time ago when the people didn't use types extensively like now. I referred to free and bound variables, and I didn't precisely say what it means. So the notion of free variables is defined recursively over the term structure. So we say that free of x, so this is the like an operator which we apply to a term, and it returns the set of free variables. So the free variables of a variable is the set containing this variable only. Then there are free variables of an application, as T say. And these are free S union with free T. And the third clause is the interesting one, lambda xs. This is free s minus x. So here we'll remove this this x from the set of free variables of s. And by definition, a very is free in T if x belongs to free T, and a variable is bound in T if x doesn't belong to free T. So, and this explains why lambda is also called a binder. So we've got a variable which we bind with lambda, and hence is bound. Right, and then there is the substitution, this capture avoidance substitution I have been talking about. And formal definition looks like this. So if we have a variable and we substitute this variable, if we substitute this variable with a term, then we get this term unconditionally. And if we have a variable x and we substitute another variable with some term t, then the result is again x, provided that x is not equal to y. So these are the boring clauses, and the interesting ones are like this, st. This is equal to what? To okay, this is also fairly boring. And then we have lambda x t s equal to does it look correct? I just found a definition in the book. Now it looks suspicious, actually. Perhaps this is wrong, right? Yeah, so right, it doesn't have the effect that we wanted because we do not want an occurrence of y in S to be bound here, so right. Just their own definition, apparently. Apparently, a book on lambda calculus may contain a definition of non-capture avoiding substitution. Should have checked it. Yeah, you can fix it. The problem is when you try to design the right definition on your own, you always run through dead ends every time. So you can design it, but it takes time because you remember of one thing, then some other thing happens. So it's some iteration. So I didn't want to spend time on it because I wanted to just to take the definition that is ready to use. Perhaps we need to postpone it to the next lecture again when I find it, because I thought it was the capture avoiding, but it's not capture avoiding. Yeah, it's a good topic for an exercise, but I didn't want to spend time on this. I just wanted to present it. Let's assume for the time being that the right definition exists. And yeah, I need to postpone it until the next lecture, I think. Yeah, anyway. Let's just assume that we have a right notion. We can suitably rename the variables, and I mean, this definition can work too if you rename the variables properly. It just doesn't work in a general case. One rule which I didn't mention last time was the iter rule, which is like this: lambda x fx. So this is called iter reduction. And yeah, it's straightforward, I guess, because this says it's a function which is obtained by applying f to the argument. So, okay, this is just the f. And yeah, one speaks about alpha beta reduction. Is this relation. So what this means is the union of this alpha and beta and the transitive closure of it. So we can make form arbitrary sequences of alpha and beta, and including the sequences of zero lengths, and alpha, beta, eta reduction is alpha, beta, eta, alpha, beta, and eta is this kind of reduction. And they are usually treated separately because this ETA rule, it's not always well behaved. So this alpha-beta reduction and alpha-beta ETA reduction, they have a number of properties. And one well-known property is it's called diamond property, or it's also called confluence. What does it mean? It means that if we have two sequences of transitions, alpha, beta, starting from the same term, so we reduce the term using this alpha, beta rules and obtain T1, but we could use different expressions and reduce it to T2. So then there is always exists a term S such that T1 and T2 are usable to it. It's a nice property, an important property. It says that if you want to define the semantics of a term by reduction, then it doesn't matter how you do this reduction. So it's a determinism in a way. And the same applies to alpha, beta, eta. So I'm using the stars everywhere, which means that it's not necessarily one reduction, it may be a long sequence of reductions. This is one interesting fact. And another fact is alpha beta is not terminating. This is a sort of a negative result in a way. What does it mean? It means let me call it T1 so that I can speak of T2, etc. So there's a term such that we can reduce it to another term and to another term and infinitely long. And why is it a kind of negative result is, again, if we wanted to use this reduction relation to speak of semantics of programs, it means that certain programs do not have a semantic in a way, because the sequence diverges. So what's the semantics? Nothing. And I'm not going to show the effect one, which is fairly difficult. Fact two is very very easy to show because you just provide a term where you have this divergence, and this term as this. Which is a fairly strange construction. So this is a function which applies the argument to itself. And this is a copy of it. So we can try to apply beta reduction here. And what we get would be lambda x x x well, nothing very particularly interesting happens, so if we apply beta reduction to it, we just get it again, and it means that we can continue to infinitely many times. So from the semantic perspective, what's the meaning of this term? The meaning of the term is divergence. So we can say that this program is the meaning of this program is not defined, or it diverges. And what else? I wanted to mention so you can view this fact as something positive, actually, because if you didn't have a divergence, it would probably mean that this calculus is not very expressive. And the lambda calculus, the entire lambda calculus, is actually very expressive, and this is sort of a witness of it. So you can modify this term so that you get something useful, and namely, you can define a so-called fixed point combinator. So we can write y equal to lambda f So what I've done here, I've just taken this term and added a function here, and in which sense is it useful? Well, let's just try to form this term, yf. So note that all these letters that I'm using, they are variables, because as I define the lambda calculus, there is nothing else but the variables. So when I write a function, lambda f, f is just a variable, but I use it as a function. And the silent feature of untyped lambda calculus, it doesn't make a difference between data and functions. So I can just take arbitrary f, and I apply this y to it, and what I get, I would try to reduce it by beta reduction, and what I'm getting here is lambda y f y y. Okay, it's a small f. And further, I can get f. So this is now something useful because I applying this fixed point combination to f, and if I better use it, then I get f applied to the fixed point combinator. Why is it useful? Because I can use this to model fixed point computations. So I can iterate my function. So if I start with this, I get f and then f of f, new f, and so on. And if I write my program f in a smart way, that it would analyze how many iterations I made, it would eventually terminate. That's the intention. So. There are many other things one can express here. I maybe just show church numerals. Those of you who attended the theory of programming course must have seen it already and in more detail. So I don't want to clash too much with it. But I would just want to illustrate the fact that this untyped lambda calculus is very expressive and you can basically do any programming in it. So you might have noticed that as a programming language, this misses lots of things like numbers. But this is not a problem because you can define the numbers. So you can say that by definition, 0 is a lambda f, lambda z, 1 is lambda f lambda z f z, 2 is lambda f lambda z, and so on. So hopefully it's clear how to get so on, because what I'm doing here is I just iterating the f n times, where n is my number. So I can encode a number by applications of a function. And you can define one can define plus and minus and true and false and if. And if you combine if with the fixed point combinator, you get the while loop. So in principle, this is there's a way to model a simple imperative language encoded in the lambda calculus, in the untyped lambda calculus. This is a nice system from a mathematical perspective, but it's not so nice from a programming perspective. I'm just presented it to start somewhere, and now I'm going to change it and criticize it in various ways. And one possible way to criticize it is to ask ourselves how this is can be implemented, because if we want to write down a, if you use it as a programming language, you need to write an interpreter or a compiler, and then there's a question of efficiency, and there's a question of understanding what the program is doing. So, in terms of understanding what the program is doing, what helps us from the mathematical side is the operational semantics. So the operational semantics shows us how we unfold our expression. But if you look at the bit reduction, which is like a candidate for the semantics, it doesn't very well answer this question because it's not deterministic, as I said. So you do not specify where precisely you reduce the expression. You can reduce it very deeply inside the term, or you can reduce in the very high level. So what is precisely the order? If you write down some program, some compiler, you need to say you resolve the non-determinism, or you need to resolve the non-determinism. And this leads to the notion of an evaluation strategy. Or it's also called reduction strategy. So basically, informally, this is some rule which explains how we unfold the program, how we interpret it. So if we have an operational semantics, I mean, alternatively, you can say that if you have an evaluation strategy for some language, then you can write an interpreter for it. And we specify the evaluation strategies for our lambda terms with operational semantics, or it's also called, all right, I just write it as a sentence. I've been talking about operational semantics, and now I teach the structural operational semantics. I don't actually know if there's non-structural operational semantics, but every examples which I've seen, they were structural. Structural means that you've got your program as a term, the term has a structure, and you define the semantics by induction over the structure. and you do it by means of rules. So I just show how it looks like, and then hopefully it will be immediately clear. We start from the from defining an evaluation strategy, which corresponds to the standard order, or we can call it standard evaluation strategy. So what happens here? We consider a set of rules. So this is our normal bit reduction, but I write this line meaning that it's a rule which has a top and bottom, but there is nothing on the top. So the top is the premise, and there are no premises for this rule. That's why I just leave it blank. And then there are rules like this. So what this all means, it means that if we want to show that that our lambda term converts to a certain value, then we prove it with this rule, as in logics. So we can just reduce this to this, and if P reduces to P prime and P is not of this form, then we reduce P and leave Q intact. And if P reduces to P prime, then we reduce under the lambda abstraction. And if Q reduces to Q prime and P converges, so it means under these rules, this has this reduces to a reducible form under these rules. Then PQ reduces to PQ prime. So the main rule is this one, of course. And these rules, they provide like a congruence closure. So it's what I said informally previously, that we can rewrite inside the term. And these rules just formalize it, but they say precisely in which order I find the expression which I reduce. So I do not do it in arbitrary order. I do it in a certain order. So like if I have PQ, so you see there are two rules for the PQ. But if P is not of this form, this rule has priority. So I'm trying to rewrite the left hand side, and then if I'm done, I'm trying to write the left hand side, and sorry, I didn't explain this. This it should be spelled what it means precisely. So P down error SO means that P is is irreducible with respect to this relation. So now if I compare these two rules, I rewrite the argument only if P is a normal form, and otherwise I rewrite the function. So they are mutually exclusive. And that's why this ordering is also called left most outer most ordering, because I'm like looking at the term from left to right and rewrite it. Maybe maybe I try to write and to give an example. So, and using these rules, we define this relation: P converges to V if So I can specify what means that p reduces to a value by saying that there is a derivation in the system. So the derivation means that I form a tree. A tree using these rules, where this reduction is at the very bottom. So consider an example. Let me find some term for which there is a simple normal form, lambda x, let's say y x, and we apply it to let's say lambda x x applied to y, say. So suppose we want to use this the semantics to calculate the normal form of this term. So I want to have something like this, but I don't know yet what's on my right-hand side. And to calculate this, I try to match this the bottom with one of these rules. And how I can match it? So there are 1, 2, 3 candidates, right? Because it's an application. So this wouldn't work because p is a lambda, has lambda on top. So this this wouldn't work either because this says that p is a normal form, but obviously, well, actually, what is p? Right, I can use this this reduction. So because p is in a normal form, and I can rewrite q. So I will try to rewrite q. And I use the fact that this is normal. How can I rewrite it? Okay, I try to find another rule and try to match it. So what is it like? It's like this. So the other rules do not apply. So I can just rewrite it to y by this rule And this rule doesn't have a premise. Yes. Yeah, because I don't know when I'm writing down, I try in different rules. Yeah, because I need to find which one matches. Which one? This. In which place? Here. Here. So I've used this rule, right? And you say this one matches two. This is actually correct, yes. Yes, this is a good point. I think there must be a condition missing. So
if you add the constraint for the right rule, then P isn't
this one. I mean, right. I think you're right, and I was wrong that. That I use that rule. I think there's some bug here. So this rule should be applied first because there is a beta radix on the very top. So but you're right that this is not reflected in the rules. I guess there is a condition missing somewhere.
If you add the constraint like in the second rule that p isn't lambda x dot t, then you should be able to apply.
P is not okay. I think this is what yes, which is what is missing, lambda xt, right? Yeah. So wrong. We actually use. We actually use this, and it means we have no, this is also somehow wrong. Then I also need to modify this rule too. So the right form for it would be. T provided that. P Q X. SOT. Because otherwise I would not be able to iterate. So, hence, here we have y applied to lambda x, x, y. And now we can we can use this rule. So let me just complete this picture. Right, and why we have this? It's good to make an example because you see all the bugs. So we need actually one more rule here saying that T reduces to, so if T is in the normal form, then it reduces to itself. So this is the rule which I need here, here, because if I apply this rule to this term upwards, then this is what I would get. So because I substitute y to x here, and I get y, but y is in the normal form. So this must be, there must be an induction base somewhere. And then once I reached it, I can complete the right hand side. Yeah, it's possible, but we do not need them too much. I just wanted to compare it with something that I present next, and this is more important. This order is important because there's a certain fact about it, which is called standardization theory. Which says if and T is alpha beta normal, then and T is SO normal. So this is like a bridge between mathematics and computer science a bit, because this relation was defined purely mathematically. We've got term, we write them arbitrarily, we don't care. And here we say we care, and we say how we care precisely. And this theorem says that if I take the strategy, this which I've described, then I find all the normal forms which I could find using the this alpha beta reduction. And when I write this, it means that there is a reduction to T. So So we've got non-deterministic lots of possibilities to reduce by alpha and beta, and there is no guarantee that we reach a normal form, even if a normal form exists. So this non-determinism provides you very rich means to find the normal form, if there is one. And if you reduce the non-determinism, it can be the case that that the normal form is not found, even if it exists. And in this sense, this is the essence of the theorem. It says, even though we restrict the choice, we find all the normal forms which would be found in the most non-deterministic way. I explain what I mean. Where the heck is this example? Can try this example. I need to improvise. So we can have something like lambda x and lambda y, and then I guess y, right? So I can consider this term. It's a projection to the second argument. So it's a lambda function which takes one, two arguments, and it returns the second one. And this omega is the omega which I defined before, which doesn't have a normal form, because what you can do it on the unfold. And now I can beta reduce it to lambda y, right? So if I just take the uppermost radix, then I get this, and this is a normal form. But if I just started reducing omega, I would not terminate. Hence, the reduction strategy matters. And that's what I mean when I'm saying that alpha beta reduction potentially allows you to find any normal form it exists, which, because in this statement we are talking about such T that some reduction exists. And this theorem says that under this order, which is deterministic, we still find all the normal forms which we would potentially find with alpha and beta reduction. So, like in this case, if you apply the rules of the standard ordering to it, you would converge. So it wouldn't give you divergence. That's the importance of this order. And then, Then there is yet another improvement of this relation strategy, and namely, again, for the sakes of implementation, one could consider forbidding rewriting under under lambda, because well, lambda expression, if you have a lambda on top, it's a function, and there is no need to write it. Because what you need to write is, when you apply a function to an expression, you need to know what the result is. That's why you need beta reduction there. If you have lambda on top, well, that's not a data. It's something to be stored as a function. You don't need precisely what it is. So this standard order was improved. So that this writing under lambda is forbidden. And this also simplifies the rules. So what right, I try to modify the rules in the same way as I did with the standard order. Hopefully this is correct. So PQ. Right, so this CBN means call by name. And it's also called sometimes lazy. So this is an evaluation strategy similar to the previous one, except that we do not have a clause for rewriting under lambda. So we try, really try to reduce the function. And if we evaluated the function, we replace this function by the result of evaluation and reduce the application. So what I wanted to add here is that call by name finds all normal alpha beta normal forms. And it means that I mean, what we calculate may not be an alpha beta normal form, because we do not reduce under lambda, but we diverge as many times. I mean, we never diverge if alpha b, if there is a possibility for alpha beta reduction not to diverge. And now this is something practical. So I'm trying to gradually transfer from the theoretical strand to a practical one. So migrate from lambda calculus to something useful. And this is almost useful in the sense that the programming languages do use this evaluation strategies nowadays. Although there is a vastly more widely used evaluation strategy, which is called call by value, which I'm going to present next. But I wanted to show you an example, and if I show an example, then I probably will not be able to show the call by value, so we do it next time. And if I don't show you an example, you will be completely bored. So the example that I'm going to show you, it's not exactly about the call by name evaluation strategy. It's about so-called call by need evaluation strategy. So the difference between call by name and call by need is from the theoretical perspective not very high, in the sense they calculate the same normal forms, but call by need is optimized a bit better, in the sense that it uses sharing of subterms of a lambda term. Namely, if you apply a beta reduction to a term and this leads to copying, and then these copies are shared in the memory, and if you rewrite again, then what was shared is simultaneously written. But this yields, this is like an optimization, but I probably need to switch it on somewhere. Does anyone has a clue? Okay, so I want to show you an example in Haskell, which implements precisely this this call by need strategy. And I'm not going to show you these examples with lambda calculus, but I'm going to show you something else, because this laziness is a robust concept. So it stems from lambda calculus, but you can consider laziness in different contexts. So in programming, you can consider lazy pairing, lazy lists, etc. And the idea is every time the same. So you do not evaluate things when you can avoid it. Like in this term which I showed with divergence, with omega. So you do not evaluate omega. You try to evaluate something else. What is needed, what you cannot avoid. That's why it's called lazy. And Right, so this is a Haskell interpreter. I invite you to install it and try to play with it. So you can just type commands in it, and there is a funny feature of Haskell that you can generate infinite lists. So you can write something like this. And what is meant is that this is an infinite list starting from one. If I just press a button, it will start outputting it like this. But I don't want it. So I want infinite lists to exist and to operate with them, like with lambda expressions, but I don't want to print them completely. So I say, All right, so instead I say take 100 of 1 and 2 dots. So now it's again the same infinite list, but I apply a function take 10, which says take 10 elements from this list. So this can all be encoded in lambda calculus, and you can basically use this material to show this take n would like apply beta reduction 10 times and then finish. But this can be done directly, and the semantics of Haskell just uses laziness of lists, but it implements the same idea. So if I say take 10, then I just cut this infinite list after 10 iterations, and I do not evaluate the rest because I don't need this rest. So the rest disappears, like this omega disappeared in my reduction of a lambda term. And right, I can have a bit more complex example. I can define even numbers. So this is again a typical Haskell way to define lists. It's like from set theory, there's a comprehension notation when you say I form a set of elements 2 times x, where x is such that something. And such that something is here, x ranges over infinite list starting from 1. When I form this, I get a list of all even numbers. And I can check it. I can again say take 100 of even, and you see this is really even numbers, and I can define odd numbers in the same way. I just need to subtract 1 here, now you see there are odd numbers, and now I can write a function which would form is which would zip this two lists. Zip means that I take one element from the first list, then one element from the second list, one element from the first, one from the second, etc. So what I'm expecting here is that if I zip odd and even numbers, that I had just old numbers starting from one. And right, this is how it's implemented. This is recursion. So, and again, maintaining the reference to lambda calculus, you can write it down as a fixed point definition. So you could write zip is equal to this y fixed point functor applied to certain expression. Instead, in Haskell, you just write a definition which is recursive. So zip is on the left, and it also occurs on the right. And I implement here the switching of arguments, because I need to take one from the first, one from the second, etc. So I swap. I start with XS, and here it's YS. So in the next iteration, it will be swapped, etc. So, and this means that this is a list from which the first element is X and the tail is XS.
Don't you need an set YS XS in the last part? Because you want to set.
Right. I think this was a wrong and wrong expression. Like this, right?
Yes.
No, I made it work yesterday. Perhaps I forgot something.
It would be X colon and then where it gets it.
Oh, not there. Behind the
Behind the bar is the real one. Because it complains that the type is.
Right, this is nonsense, of course. Right, this I just didn't record my last correction, sorry. Right. And I hit take 100 of zip of odd and even. Right, so it does work. And yeah, I'm exploring the laziness all the way. So the lists are infinite, but this doesn't hurt because I mentally unfold my beta terms, my lambda terms sufficiently many times. Right. Okay, this is it for today.